Welcome to the Conspiracy Files. It made the national news and continued to be a big story for some time after that spring Sunday morning incident in 2002 when a tugboat captain evidently lost his mind, literally, and drove a barge into a span of a bridge over I-40. The incident happened in Oklahoma near Gore, where there just happens to be a nuclear waste dump. When we first started to do this story, a program that literally has been years in the making, we knew it had some elements of conspiracy that had to be addressed. Now, here we are in April of 2008. And we've been working on this story for several years with several producers and researchers. Roberta Scott, Jane Swartley, Larry Dickin, Adam Shannon, and Linda Jensen, who, by the way, has written a great spy novel based on the event called The Bridge Collapse Murder. We will be revealing all of the puzzling elements of this story, including the latest developments concerning one of the main players, one of the central figures of the incident, William C. Clark, a man who inserted himself into that story on that Sunday morning in the spring of 2002, a man of mystery. He later was sentenced to prison for impersonating an army officer, and then he had his parole revoked just last week because of a strange incident involving Clark calling the Russian embassy and saying that he was part of an alleged conspiracy plot to assassinate President Putin of Russia. We have many questions and very few solid answers, but we do have the testimony of William Clark himself. He did an interview with us right after the Putin incident. Listen to this interview and see if it does not ring true with the other shows we have done on mind control. The MK Ultra program, for one, from the CIA, and others from the Defense Department. Why would William Clark, a man who has had, by all accounts, a very rough personal life, be used by anyone for anything? It is a puzzling question indeed, but our investigations show that in these mind control operations, they always seem to indicate someone who can be controlled, someone who's hearing voices in his head, has severe headaches, nightmares, missing time. They always seem to be happening to the losers in society. Could this be a grand scheme of the black ops, using only victims for instruments of their dirty deeds? Victims who have no accountability, who have no emotional stability. Unfortunately, it seems to be the case. Stay tuned. We'll be talking with William Clark. It's an amazing story. I'm sure you will agree.
The American Southwest, a land of abandoned stagecoach stops, crumbling ghost towns, obscure, overgrown wagon trails, all ghosts of an exciting and romantic past. But amidst the hogback ridges and desolate expanses of the Four Corners region, stories float about of secrets, whispers of extraterrestrial spacecraft, intruding galactic visitors from other worlds, underground facilities, and above top secret recovery operations. Come now on a journey through this prehistoric land as we visit several locations where some of the most guarded secrets of the modern age have alleged to unfold. Along the way, we will speak with some of the most respected investigators, reporters, authors, and lecturers in the field of UFO research.
Fallen
angels,
the DVD that shows the mysteries that haunt the desert Southwest. Order Fallen Angels today from ShopCherryPippin.com. This is Jerry Pippin. Welcome to the Conspiracy Files, and we're broadcasting from Shadowwood Mall here in Muskogee, Oklahoma, and we have William C. Clark with us. If that name sounds familiar, if you've looked at our I-40 bridge segment on our Conspiracy Files, then you probably recognize him. He was the man who was convicted of being an imposter of a U.S. Army captain, I believe. We'll find out that story in a minute from William, since he's here. But basically, William, you served several years in the penitentiary for this offense, right?
Yes, that's correct, 70 months.
And you're back here in Muskogee. You never lived in Muskogee, though.
No, never.
That just one of the quirks, I guess, of the justice system. They want you where you were convicted. This is where the trial was.
Yeah.
We're gonna talk in detail about what happened and get your side of the story. You know, everybody and their brother has reported on this like they're a big expert. And I've been waiting for a chance to talk to you because I want to find out exactly what happened from the beginning to the end, if it's okay with you.
That's fine with me. I'm ready to tell my story.
Before we even start with that, let's give a little background about you personally. You were born in Texas. You were an Army brat at one time.
Yes.
Your father or stepfather or somebody was in the service.
My father's and my uncle's and my grandfather.
But you never really served in the service yourself?
No, I was in ROTC and I've traveled all around the world with the military.
We'll talk about all that here in a minute when we get to the part about the bridge collapse. But you've been making a little news. I noticed AP here a while back had a story about you calling the Russian embassy. Is that true?
Unfortunately, yes, because of my medication.
Okay, by medications, what do you mean? What are you on?
I take Seroquel and I take Doxepin.
And what is this for? To relieve anxiety or what?
Seroquel is used to help with people with bipolar disorder, personality disorder, delusional disorder.
How long have you been diagnosed as bipolar?
Since right after I got arrested.
So you didn't have a history of any mental problems before that, emotional problems?
I had, but I never really did anything about it.
Yeah. So you're pretty well taking the word of the U.S. government. I guess they called you into your parole officer and said, hey, you called a Russian embassy, is that right?
Yeah, when I was in Oklahoma City and I got called up and to come in to see my probation officer. And when I showed up, there was an FBI agent there and a Secret Service agent.
And what happened? What did they say?
They said that I called the Russian embassy with a plot to...
Now, this was October 25th or something?
Yeah, something like that, yes.
Reason I ask about that, there was a big plot about... Vladimir Putin, that's who you said that there was the plot against, right?
Yes.
Do you remember anything about making that call at all?
I remember hearing voices and stuff about it, and I thought
hearing
that...
Hearing voices, what do you mean? Somebody saying, William, go call...
No. Okay. I thought that I heard people's voices talking about a plot against the president, the Russian, Vladimir Putin, or whatever his name is. And I know how our government system is, and that's why I called the Russian embassy. And I told them what I heard.
So you heard these voices, and these voices were saying, do you remember what they were saying or anything? Were men's voices, women's voices,
it was,
italic voices? What was it?
It was men's voices. They were talking about how they had someone that was close to him that was going to help take him out.
And the Russian embassy, of course, reported it to the FBI.
they reported it to the, I guess, the State Department or to the Secret Service.
And they went down the chain. And
then apparently this happened like on the 24th or 25th or something like that. And then the following day I got called in and I wasn't even given my rights or anything. They started giving me the drill. Started threatening me and everything.
By threatening, you mean like sending you back to prison? Or threatening you how?
Threatening by having me locked up, throwing away the key, making sure that I'd be buried, basically. That that I would never see the light of day.
Now, why don't you tell our audience a little bit, before we go any further about this, how you got to be in Oklahoma City?
After I got released from the Federal Bureau of Prisons, the Federal Probation and Parole Office had denied me going to California to live with my mother because of the fact that the place that she lived was too small.
She lives in a small town in the desert.
Yes, and she was living in a trailer, in a mobile home.
Mm-hmm.
But they said...
Well, everybody in the desert lives in a trailer almost, I'm kidding.
But, yeah. Well, about 80% of them, I'd say. But they wouldn't let me go there because of that reason. So it was mandatory that if
now,
I...
Now, this is while you were serving your hard time in Victorville?
Yes. And they had denied that. And in the Federal Bureau of Prisons, if you don't have a relocation to a place, then you have to go back to the jurisdiction that sentenced you. And I had went to the halfway house in Oklahoma City.
Well, you actually were sentenced over here in eastern Oklahoma, though.
Yes, but they don't have a halfway house for federal prisoners in the eastern district.
What goes on at a halfway house? We hear about that all the time. What's this? Is it a dormitory or something, or is it apartments, or what is it?
No, you have rooms. Some are two men, some are four men. All depends on the halfway house, I'd imagine.
So you had a roommate?
I had three other roommates.
Okay, so you're in a room with four people?
Yes.
You have bunk beds or what?
Yes.
Okay.
And
kind of reminds me of my Army service. I always got the top bunk, but I'm not so sure that's the best deal.
No, not always. especially when you've done time in prison.
You're right.
But in the halfway house and stuff, not in the halfway house. They you have to get your ID, your identification, everything first, and then they go job searching.
And when they do this they sent you to Oklahoma City and they put you on a bus to send you there because I know you called me one time.
Yes,
because I was going to meet you originally.
Yeah, they put me on the bus from Victorville, California. To Oklahoma City.
Because
Oklahoma.
Originally we were going to go out to the prison and do the interview, but we decided it'd be best, since you were coming this way, just to wait.
Yes.
And then we decided it'd be better for you to be out and working, which you are now,
mm-hmm.
and trying to be a citizen. So we wanted to get away from any influences at all so you could tell your story.
Yes.
And so it's been a long road, but we finally made it.
Yeah, finally. Slowly but surely, we finally made it.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back. Before I even go to the story, and we're going to go it step by step, if it's okay with you,
that's
for
fine.
People, because if they look at our website, they see the I-40 bridge story, and they see all of the videos, and they see all of the things. They really need to know a little bit more about it from your side of the story.
Well, that's one side that was never told.
And, well, we're telling it now.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that in a moment, but I just can't leave this calling the Russian embassy. That's so far out.
I couldn't believe it either. I've had incidents where I blacked out. Like one time back in like 94, 95, I was in Savannah, Georgia. And the next thing I know, I woke up in jail in New Orleans under a different name.
And was it weeks later, or?
It was probably about a week and a half, almost 2 weeks later.
And I didn't know. How did you know you had a different name? You looked at your wallet and you had
I didn't have my wallet. I was in the jail in New Orleans. And I was.
What did they arrest you there for?
It was for, I don't remember now.
Yeah.
But turned around and I was like, wait a second, what am I doing in jail? And they kept on calling me this Nichols person. I'm like, wait a second, that's not my name. They said, well, that's the name that you gave when you was arrested.
But you remembered nothing about that?
I don't remember anything. All I know is that one moment I was in Georgia.
Now they sent you down to Fort Worth for a medical mental evaluation.
Yes.
You didn't stay very long.
Well, when I first went there, after I first got arrested, I stayed there for, I think it was about 47, 48 days.
That was before the trial.
Well, there was never a trial.
Okay, we'll talk about that too
right.
when we get to it.
They found me incompetent and everything. And I come back and...
Well, they still tried you as a competent person.
Well, that's because the prosecution decided to move the time of the court hearing, made it earlier instead of the time that it was supposed to have been. Because the doctor that did the evaluation that found me incompetent...
Now, look, you're saying that the doctor's report was going to come out that you were incompetent, but they moved the trial up.
Right.
And so they could try you as a competent person?
No. What happened was that they turned around and ordered the records sealed. And they ordered a new competency hearing.
Now, who ordered the records sealed? The judge?
The courts, yes. The judge.
Was this here in Muskogee?
Yes.
And that was on probably a motion by the state. I mean, the feds.
Yes, by the federal prosecution. Mm.
Okay, so we're getting ahead of the story. You went back after you called the Russian embassy.
Yes, and
do you think you really called the Russian embassy?
I'm not sure.
Reason I'm asking, I mean, you don't really remember that, do you?
Really, I don't.
You're just taking their word for it.
Exactly. I know what I was told by the feds.
You had a cell phone. Have you ever tried to look at the records?
It doesn't show on my cell phone. I don't know if they must have been erased by the feds when they got my phone. But,
Okay, so they called you in Oklahoma City where this actually happened.
Yes.
And the FBI lady, the investigator, was the Secret Service there at the time?
When I got arrested, there was an FBI agent there. There was another.
At the moment of the arrest, or they came out to your apartment where you were living?
No, they didn't come to my apartment. I was called. I was contacted by my federal probation officer who had courtesy supervision for me for the Eastern District because I was living and working in Oklahoma City. And she told me that I needed to report to her office at 3 o'clock. I showed up at 3 o'clock to report. Every time she's ever called asking to report, I've reported. When I got there was an FBI agent there. There was another gentleman that's with he was a police officer, but he was detached as a special agent for the FBI.
An Oklahoma City police officer?
No. He was out of some other city.
You don't remember who?
I'm not sure what
okay,
city
okay.
it was. He was a
I didn't know they
detective
did that.
From another city.
Have you had that experience before?
No. And when I got in there, I started getting the riot act by them, talking about a phone call that I had made to the Russian embassy about a plot against the Russian president's life. And
do you remember what these voices said the attack would be or where it would be or anything?
The voices I heard was talking about... people I heard saying that they had somebody inside of Russia, close to the Russian president, that was going to help take him out. And I even said a day on it.
Now, I want to jump forward here for a moment, and I'm going to come back to this.
Okay.
But, when the bridge collapsed on I-40 at 7:08 or something like that in the morning.
7:09.
Well, it was close.
Yes.
How come you know? How do you know it's 709?
Because of the fact that there was a gentleman that was actually videotaping the crash, the bridge site.
Oh, really?
Yes, they actually have footage of the collapse.
Did you talk to him?
Yes, I did.
He was just somebody there taking pictures?
Well, he was out there with his family, staying in a house at the riverfront.
Now you pulled over to that rest stop before you get to that bridge. You told me one time when
yes.
we were talking, and you talked to several of our producers along the way as well. And we've pretty well investigated the story a lot from your standpoint and what you've had to say and what other people say. Why did you pull over to that rest stop? You said, I think you told Adam in Oklahoma City that you felt uneasy or something in that day.
You know when you have that sixth sense about something, you have that feeling that something was happening. And that's what I had. I had that feeling just to pull over. This was at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Now, where you were going and why and all that in a minute. But you just had this feeling, and you've had this feeling before.
Mm-hmm. And 95% of the time, whenever I had that feeling, it's always occurred either immediately before.
Did you have any idea before they called you down to the parole officer at 3 o'clock in the afternoon that you'd called the Russian embassy?
No.
This was completely a shock to you.
Yeah.
You seem like you're reasonably ready to accept it is the reason I'm asking.
Well, I'm ready to accept it because of the fact that I know that I hear voices, and I know sometimes I black out.
Now, these voices, do they tell you to do things?
No, they don't really tell me.
I'm just curious.
Tell me to do anything. It's that they talk about things, and it's like suggestions and stuff of what's happening or whatnot. And I took it upon myself to make the phone call.
I mean, is it more like these voices are? Do you think it's a hunch, or do you? I mean, what do you make of it? Or do you?
Well, I make it kind of spooky, really. I've had dreams and stuff about stuff that's happened.
Do the dreams come true?
A lot of them does.
There are regular events that you probably wouldn't know about. I mean,
see,
I've known you. You've written me from federal prison. We've talked. You've talked to three of our producers at least.
Yes.
I feel like I know you pretty well, and you just don't seem like the type of guy that would know about Putin. This seems so far out.
Yeah.
Does it seem that way to you, too?
It does. The first time I really even heard the name was really when the FBI agent asked me about that. I had been off my medication for about 2 weeks. I was out.
Now, the reason you were off your medications is because you didn't have any money?
No, it was just that I had ran out of my medication, and the medical center, the med clinic in Oklahoma City where I got my medication wouldn't give me an appointment for 3 weeks to get my medication refilled.
So, in other words, they're trying to hold you responsible on the official story that you don't have your medications, and they're the ones that wouldn't give it to you.
Well, it wasn't the feds that didn't give it to me.
Yeah, what kind of clinic is this?
It's called North Rock.
And who runs it?
It's I guess it's a state-ran facility, county-ran.
How'd you find out about them?
Through the halfway house. They're the ones that got me my medication when I ran out of the halfway house.
Well, frankly, if the federal government recommended that or told you about it, then they're responsible.
Well, the halfway house is an independently owned and operated halfway house. They just have a contract.
They are working under a government from the U.S.
Well, both state and
contract,
federal.
You know.
They have a contract with both the state and feds.
Yeah, right. In fact, I imagine your encounters with the federal prison system, you ran across a lot of privatization. You know, a lot of companies doing work for them. In other words,
with my little experience I've had with the feds, like the Oklahoma Halfway House in Oklahoma City, which is a private-owned facility who has contracts with both state and federal prisons. But in this federal system, you don't really see any privatization there. Only thing you see that's really private is like Votech, Unicor. Unicor is a private company that.
What do they do? Train you for?
Well, Unicor is like they are corporation companies that manufacture filing cabinets. They do rebuild Humvees.
Federal prisoners do the work for this company.
Yes.
Okay. While they're behind bars.
Yes.
Behind the walls.
Yes.
We've talked enough about that. Basically, what we're saying is you don't remember making these calls. You don't remember a lot of these things. You've had incidents where, like, you're missing. You came up as a different person one time for a week and a half. Is that the only time that happened to you? Something like that? Were you...
Where I've ended up in jail under a different name or anything like that. Yeah,
you know, you had a big party or something. You didn't know what I'm talking about.
No, I've had instances before where I've ended up going from one place to another state
for no reason at all.
For no reason at all.
Why were you on the highway that morning?
I was actually on my way to Missouri,
and that's where you have relatives.
Yes, my grandmother, my sister, my nieces, and my uncles there.
And you go over to Arkansas and go up.
Yes,
from where you were, I guess you were either in New Mexico or California.
Well, I started out in California from my mom's house, and I drove through New Mexico and Texas and came up.
You literally started 2 or 3 days before that, or a day or two before?
More like a week and a half.
Uh-huh.
Took my time. I stopped at a ranch.
What made you decide that you wanted to go?
Well,
leave your mom at that point? I mean,
well, it's not that I was really leaving my mom. I was just, my grandmother is an older woman, and she always says that she wished that I was there, because I used to live with her. I used to stay there for a little while.
I mean, you know what I'm getting at, Billy. I mean, you didn't have a voice say, hey, you need to leave.
No.
Or did you?
No.
Okay.
I just wanted to see my grandmother because...
We're going to take a break, and when we come right back, let's talk about that day.
Okay.
And what happened, and how you got involved, and what happened after that. Don't go away. This is Jerry Pippin. You're listening to Conspiracy Files. The Elvis Presley Story. A collector's item thought to be extinct until recently. Now, all 13 hours of this famous worldwide radio broadcast series, produced in the 70s by rock and roll legend Ron Jacobs from Watermark Productions and heard around the world and hosted by Wink Martindale, is now available on CD. Hear the complete story, from the cradle to the grave, Elvis Presley. He was truly the king of rock and roll. The Elvis Presley Story is a collector's item with all of the music and the people who made Elvis the king of rock and roll. Order now. Limited time discount price, $39.95 plus $5.95 shipping. Don't miss the Elvis Presley Story, available to you exclusively through this radio offer. Order now the Elvis Presley Story. Hurry, supply is limited.